Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome to Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name. It's not about COVID. During the COVID era, I'm Bick Nizar. With me, the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor, back from a week away. Batch, how are you?
I'm very good. Glad to be back with you, Bick, and glad that we've got all sorts of news that's been trickling in over the weekend that isn't necessarily directly related to the games that are going to be played on the ice just yet, but everything working towards that direction. And you can feel it now with all of the news that we learned yesterday about the protocols that are going to go into place in phase 3 and 4 and a lot more detail coming through. You know, today I'm more confident than maybe I've been throughout this entire pandemic that we are going to see a return of hockey relatively soon.
Yeah. And the acceleration of all this news obviously comes as we get closer and closer to a deadline. July 13th is kind of the day, the day we're all expecting at the latest a player vote and training camps to start and all that. So it's been said that the player ratification of a CBA should come basically as late as Friday of this week. And so, you know, we spent weeks and months talking about speculative ideas of how these bubbles could work and, you know, how return to play scenarios. Now that we get closer to the deadline, we're also getting more concrete details. And what's happened over the last 72 hours, basically since Friday to last night, has been really interesting because, yeah, you're right. We're getting more solid info of what the framework of all this looks like.
And again, much like, you know, we discussed this when the league released the details for phase 2, I am very impressed with the level of detail that we're seeing from the league with regards to how they're going to manage the bubble and, you know, coming out and saying that there are going to be strict penalties for players that don't adhere to the bubble or leave the bubble. And that not only that, but then their teams could potentially lose draft picks and things like that as well. So, you know, we could debate and people will debate whether the NHL should be returning. But what's not debatable in my mind is that, you know, given that they've decided to return, they are dotting every I and crossing every T to make sure they do it in a way that is as safe as possible while also ensuring that play is able to continue and that they don't have to halt or stop this playoff format, which, of course, that last portion there was the biggest stumbling block behind why Vancouver won't be a hub city, but Edmonton and Toronto will.
Okay, so we'll try to unpack a lot of this here. I know we say it's not going to be all about COVID on the show. We are going to talk about some wild Canucks stuff. Plus, we're going to conclude Game It Takes for this week because with the day off last week, we decided to push it over the weekend. You cast a lot of votes at Sportsnet 650, so we'll tell you who won, and we'll set up this week's Game of Takes, which we will conclude on Friday. So that's still to come, but let's unpack all of this because it's exhausting, right? And I think one of the things people need to start learning is the new terms you'll have to learn. We've used the term bubble, obviously. When reading this, the term that you'll hear a lot from now on is secure zone. That's how it's written. And essentially the same thing, right? The secure zone is the bubble these players have to live in. And the other term you've probably heard a lot over the past couple of days is cohort quarantine. So the new things you kind of have to learn and be aware of. But the secure zone, the bubble, the parameters of those have been set up in these, you know, two cities that are going to be Edmonton and Toronto. So the first question I have for you, Batch, is you briefly touched on it there, is what happens when there's a positive case for a team, a player, and how do these teams and more specifically the league, how are they going to approach this? Because it's pretty fascinating how the league has kind of taken some directive over this.
Yeah, and learning the details of this really seems to be key in understanding from our perspective here in BC why Vancouver was not chosen as a hub city. You know, certainly players that test positive and have symptoms are going to be quarantined, but you know, they're not going to immediately require that the entire team be quarantined as well. You know, reading from some of the details here, any player who returns positive test results or who is symptomatic will be required to isolate, will receive necessary medical care. Players will require medical clearance to exit isolation in accordance with the protocol. If a player has had close contact with someone who tests positive for COVID-19 in the 48 hours before that individual became symptomatic or tested positive, the player will be subject to symptom checking and monitoring for 14 days, but will not be subject to isolation unless he tests positive or develops symptoms. So just because, you know, like the guy that sits next to you in the locker room or a guy that's on your line, or, you know, a guy mm-hmm. that you spend a lot of time hanging out with away from the rink, just because that guy tests positive and you've spent time with him does not necessarily mean that you are going to be asked to isolate just like he would, unless, of course, you test positive in this scenario. So that's interesting. Again, you understand why the NHL wants to be a little bit lighter on those restrictions, because yes. if you have an outbreak of multiple players on a team, then you could argue that it ruins the competitive integrity of the tournament. But at the same time, to me, you see that and you say, okay, maybe there's a higher risk for there to be an outbreak then, if you're not going to isolate those people that have been in close contact. You know, you then potentially got asymptomatic players continuing to play. And if there is a scenario where this goes wrong for the NHL, that is the spot where I see it happening, where, you know, one guy on a team tests positive, but no one else is showing symptoms, so they can continue to play. But then we have an outbreak of six or seven guys on the same yes. team, and all of a sudden, you know, you're bringing in the ringers that you've called up from the AHL to play, or potentially you don't even have enough guys to ice a team if the outbreak is that pronounced, or you've got a head coach that has to be isolated and can't be behind the bench to work his matchup game. So you hope anyway that they get all these guys into the bubble. The few cases that they've had, they're able to isolate those guys so that the bubble itself can be safe. And then you just move on from there, and you hope that other than, you know, the odd positive case here or there throughout the playoffs, that you can do this safely. But again, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And if there's a spot in this whole protocol that goes south, that to me was what really jumped out in terms of being very risky.
And that part that you illuminated there, it's therein lies the potential flaw in all this, and obviously why you see BC withdraw their own bid, because, you know, they had different standards and different protocols. So there is a leniency that has been approved for the NHL, and should this scenario go wrong, there is a circumstance set up for how to cancel phase three, phase four, if we get into the game scenario, that it basically goes through the league office. It's a joint decision with the players and the PA and the league, but all the information will get funneled to the directors for both sides, and that decision will then lie with them.
Yeah, and as I understand it, the way it will work is if the NHL decides one way or the other, mm-hmm. and the Players Association is against whatever their decision is, so let's say the NHL wants to continue in spite of positive cases, the Players Union doesn't feel the same way, then I believe there is something written in that it will be then decided by an independent arbitrator. Which, you know, certainly could get pretty messy if, you yes. know, the league is trying to soldier on and the Players Association is saying, no, we don't want to play anymore. And could you have some sort of, you know, strike or lockout type action? So there are plenty of ways that this could go wrong. There's no guarantee as we sit here today. A, there's no guarantee that we even get to the point where games are played. And B, there's no guarantee that we get to the point where you crown a Stanley Cup champion, because there's so much time and so many things that have to go right for the NHL between now and then. But as I said off the top, this is the most positive I've felt about mm-hmm. this happening, just because, you know, other than the one part we've really highlighted here about the risk of outbreak because of not isolating teammates or people that have been in close contact with someone who tests positive. Other than that, it seems to me like the NHL is doing absolutely everything it can to make sure that they limit the risk of that happening.
It's Bick Nizar, Brendan Batchelor here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. We should catch you up as well on the other news. The NHL did put out a statement just moments ago. Earlier this morning. In their testing, as of today, 396 players have now reported to club and training facilities for phase two activities. Upwards of 2,900 tests have been administered, and in total, 23 returning tests for COVID-19. Now, the last time we got an update from this from the league, there was 15 tests as of last Monday. So including the Tampa Bay Lightning outbreak, where and there were a couple of reported test cases as well, including Austin Matthews, that Saint number
Louis as well.
Yeah. So that number is 35 in total. And now, again, part of this is outside of the phase two protocol. And then dating back even further into the spring, there were 10. So we're looking at 45 cases since basically this all started within the NHL.
Or 45 confirmed cases anyway.
Correct, and, yes.
You know, people that were asymptomatic that didn't know about it or anything like that, of course, you're never going to be able to track. But, you know, that's a relatively high number, I would say, just, you know, in terms of looking at the percentages of mm-hmm. the number of players that have reported, the number of players that have tested positive. It's not an insignificant percentage, but again, what, you know, has been talked about, I've mentioned it on these airwaves for sure, and what the hope has to be is that once you get everyone into the bubble, A, everyone has to test before they come into the bubble or the safety zone or whatever we're calling it, the containment.
The secure zone.
The secure zone, there you go. So they're all going to have to test, and they're going to isolate people that test positive. And once those people have had their time in isolation, they'll be allowed into the secure zone. So you hope that once you get to that point where everyone's in the hub cities, everyone has passed tests, everyone has isolated if they didn't pass tests, that at that point, it is really a secure zone. There is not mm-hmm. COVID within that zone. And again, you know, you look at the exhaustive list of like bartenders that work at the hotel bars yep. are going to have to test every day they come into work. You know, hotel cleaning staff are going to have to test. So, you know, the NHL has thought of all these things and is doing as much in that regard in terms of testing to make sure that this is going to be as safe as they can make it. But at the same time, we know that false negatives are possible. So it's not like I'm going to sit here and say, once they get into that secure bubble, they are good to go 100%. There's no chance of things going south. All it has to take is one asymptomatic hotel worker coming into work, not realizing they've got it, you know, maybe cleaning the rooms for one team, that team then having six or seven positive cases, and suddenly, you know, the general manager and the owner for that team are crying foul saying, this isn't fair. We've lost our entire top six, say, hypothetically, and, you know, the competitive balance isn't there. So it you hope that everything goes off well. We certainly do because we want to see games played. We want to see, you know, everything get to a point where there can be a Stanley Cup champion crowned. But, you know, there are so many hypothetical scenarios we could play out and so many different directions this could go that there's no way of predicting whether that's even going to be possible.
And then once you're in the zone, I know a lot of people said, okay, you're removed from your families. What about the birth of children? There is, it seems like, ways for excused absences for you to leave and then get reintroduced into the bubble with a series of multiple tests. Four tests is what you're going to have to go through. So that does look like, for those that were wondering, say, for instance, Jordy Benn, right? There is a scenario where you can leave the secure zone. It's just going to be a while till you get back with your team.
Yeah, and it specifically said excused absences. And a couple of the examples that were listed were, you know, death of a family member or birth of a child. So you pretty much know that, A, if Jordy Ben decides that he's going to report, come to the bubble, wants to participate, wants to play, he will be allowed to leave for the birth of his child, which I believe is expected late in the month of July. So at that point, he would travel to Dallas to be there for the birth of his child. He would come back, and then you're right, it's a four-day quarantine where he's got to test negative for COVID on four consecutive days before being allowed back to participate with his teammates. So again, that has to be another sticking point that didn't work for British Columbia, that you know, BC specifically was requiring 14-day quarantines for anybody that returns from out of country. The NHL has dropped that to four in this specific instance. So, you know, there is yet again another risk that ends up in positive tests for people in a small outbreak. Now, you tend to think that within the margin of error of these tests, that you wouldn't return four consecutive false negatives. I'm not a mathematician. I don't want to crunch the numbers, but the chances of that happening have to be pretty small. If you've got COVID-19, one of those four tests is going to pop and say you test positive, and then things change for that. So while I understand our country's, you know, rigorous quarantining restrictions, and a large part of that is because you can't test everyone, when you look at this within the NHL vacuum, the amount of tests they're going to administer is staggering. They're talking about, like, you know, 2,000 tests a day across the league for all the players, all the staff, all the hotel workers. You tend to think that while there is a margin of error there, the fact that they're going to test that much and that often means that if there are any players that have COVID-19, they'll be able to nip that in the bud pretty quickly.
Okay. Those are the excused absences. We should say there are stipulations for unexcused absences. If you leave the bubble, it will come with great penalty, not only fines for the players themselves and the teams, loss of draft picks, and you are disqualified from the playoffs for the player. You are not allowed back in, basically.
Potentially. They didn't say that was for sure. They said potential expulsion from the playoffs and then potential fines or loss of draft picks to the team. So it seems like the NHL is hoping that it doesn't have to deal with that happening, but if they do, they're going to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. And, you know,
and rightfully so, it'll be quite punitive.
Yes. If it's something as simple as a guy leaves the bubble to go to a bar that he's not allowed to go to, then it should be punitive. But at the same time, you know, extenuating circumstances, medical emergencies, all of these things, it's why I imagine why the NHL has not set in place any specific penalty for these issues, because, you know, there are a litany of different reasons that a player might want to leave the bubble. Some of them could be understandable. Most of them would not be understandable. And, you know, the NHL has made the right decision eventually after, you know, sticking with Vegas for quite a while. They have made the correct decision to come to Canada. And specifically, Alberta is a great area right now in terms of not having a ton of positive tests. But Toronto, not so much, and Ontario, not so much, and there's a huge population base there. So the risk that a player would be putting his entire team under, the entire league and its return to play under, by leaving the bubble is very high. And so you understand why the NHL would come down with heavy punishment for any player that isn't willing to strictly follow the rules. And then, you know, I do like the added element that it comes back on the team as well, because it would be easy to punish a single player and say, oh, you're the one, you know, idiot that decided to go out to
it. Right. No, it's very much on these teams to educate their players.
And to monitor their players too, right? Like, I would, if I was an NHL team right now, one of the people that I'm traveling has to be like a security person who essentially has to like be a night watchman almost. Like, that's, if I was running an NHL team, like, you know, we've learned about the hotels that each team is going to have their own floor in the hotel. So if I was a, you know, if I was Jim Benning or one of the Canucks higher ups, I'm bringing my security guy and I'm saying, look, you sleep during the day and you sit next to the elevator or the stairwell all night long and you make sure that no one leaves.
And one security member is part of these teams, these groups that these teams will be bringing. So they're allowed to bring 52 people inside the secure zone. And you think 50 people, that's so many. Look, these numbers add up real quick. So you got to figure the players. That's 31 there.
31 players.
Yeah. The coaches, you got three of them. But then
probably more
managers.
Like with the Canucks, you know, you have three on the bench, but then you've got guys like Manny Malhotra and Ian Clark that you also have to bring as well. And, and you know, Daryl Seward, their video coach. And then, you know, media relations staff. They've added a requirement, has the NHL, that a social media person has to come. So, you know, someone from the Canucks has to be there to either capture video that they can put out on Twitter and their social media channels, or be there to tweet and provide behind the scenes access, which, you know, we've already seen. I think it's the Florida Panthers are doing like a video series, like a TV series on the behind the scenes of what everything looks like for their return to play. So you understand why that's an important part of this for the NHL, because they need to be bringing in fans wherever they can. And social media, of course, in today's day and age is probably the best way to do that. And we see the Canucks do a great job of that. Even last week, something as simple as Pettersson sniping a one-timer in underneath the crossbar. That gets people really excited that, hey, he's back. He's on the ice. Things are getting going.
Plus, there's a documentation of history element to this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Having someone to do that. Again, the required list of people is 43, and actually one of them is going to be the security representative that we were talking about. So your analogy there of someone from the Night's Watch is apt, because this has been something that's been taken into consideration. We should say, though, there's an intention to have social excursions for the groups outside of the secure zone, but obvious, you know, disinfecting, distancing protocols will go into this as well.
Yeah, and something we had heard a while ago, and it seems like it's been a big pitch for Edmonton's bid the whole time, has been those excursions. And that's why that video that was tweeted by the Premier of Alberta, like, you know, we joked about it a lot, but it showed these beautiful mountainscapes. It's highly likely that they have excursions into the Rocky Mountains available for these players on their off days. We had heard a while ago that, you know, Edmonton had a golf course and potentially a movie theater as part of their pitch, that these would be places that, whether they're included within the bubble, so they're completely isolated all the time, or whether there's designated times that players are able to go and play a round of golf or watch a movie or whatever it might be. You know, that's something that Edmonton always had emphasized in its bid process throughout all of this, was that they were going to provide more than just a hotel and an ice rink for these players to go to and be involved in. And so that's, again, it has to be done safely. It has to be done properly, but you can understand that. I would imagine that was an important part of this for the Players Association, that they didn't want, or the players didn't want it to be, you know, hotel room, rink, hotel room, rink, hotel room, rink, because that gets old pretty fast, regardless of how nice of a hotel you're staying in. You go a little bit stir crazy, I guess you could say. I'll be interested to see how much information we get in the media and the public about what those excursions look like and what players are allowed to do. I would imagine that they would want to keep things like that pretty quiet, because you don't want fans flocking to the golf course that all the players are playing at to try and get a glimpse of them or anything like that. But you understand the need for these guys to get out and actually be able to do something other than sitting in their hotel room and playing hockey. Because another factor of this is that players are not allowed to enter each other's hotel rooms. So you're not going to be able to have, you know, three or four teammates into your room to have a card game or something like that. You're going to have to go to a common area and do that. So that, you know, I would imagine when you're gathering together, you're doing it in larger spaces so that the risk of contracting COVID from a teammate is less likely.
Okay, that's most of what we had planned for the CBA and return to play stuff. If you have a question, 650, 650, we always encourage you being part of the conversation. We are going to talk about a game of takes. We'll set that up for you next week. And also, we'll tell you who won. But also, I wanted to pose this to you because we're going through all this legalese to get ready for actual games. And, you know, when there's actual games, the emotions of playoffs will come forward. And Canuck fans have a litany of people that have risen or have had players who have drawn the ire of the fan base for very short sprints of these series, but their legacies have lived on for a long time. Think of Dustin Byfuglien. Think of Michael Ferland recently. Those players throughout the course of history have maintained their status amongst Canucks fans as those to get frustrated or most annoyed by. We want to ask you, in a potential Canucks Wild series, who are the guys that you already know you are going to be frustrated with them in a 5-game series? Not that you're dreading the series, just that you know, oh man, this guy is just going to make life miserable, and I can't wait to talk about it 20 years from now when we mention player X and how he either ruined or made the series because it was that enjoyable to beat him. 650, 650, your submissions are welcome. We'll get to Game of Takes and all that coming up. Bick Nizar, Brendan Batchelor on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650.
Falling too fast to prepare for this. Tripping in the world could be dangerous. Everybody circling as vultures.
Sportsnet 650. It is Social Distance Central. 650, 650 if you want to chime in. We'll also get to Game of Takes in just a couple of minutes. Vic Nizar, Brendan Batchelor here with you. We wanted to touch on this. Got a good text messages coming in on it already. 650, 650. Because playoff series bring emotion, they bring memories, and sometimes they are negative, and we will forever remember certain players who have destroyed series for the Vancouver Canucks, or against the Canucks, and you know they live on in memory, and
most
they
of them
become players
Blackhawks too, at least recently, like Duncan Keith, Dustin
for
Butlin,
sure.
The list goes on, right?
Or you know, you could go back to like the Minnesota series, that there were some frustrating players to go
West
on.
Balls.
Yeah. Just his name is synonymous now, or just lives on in the city because of what a great series he had versus Vancouver. And just that, not necessarily a guy who runs up the score sheet, but just a frustrating player to go against because it disabled a player that wasn't able to perform to his best of abilities or just was always in the goalie's kitchen, whatever it is. So Byfuglien is the guy I usually go to, obviously, with those Blackhawks teams, and scored prominently. We know Michael Ferland's impact in that Calgary series. So who are the Minnesota Wild players that you're pre-getting angry at, that you just know, man, this guy's going to ruin the day for at least one game of series? He's going to be in Jacob Markstrom's crease, or he's going to be the D-man that takes a cheap shot, whatever it is. Who are those guys you're already getting mad at?
Yeah, and we've got a few texts in here, 650, 650. Alistair in Clearwater says, Jordan Greenway, Marcus Foligno, and Ryan Hartman, all relentlessly physical agitators that will absolutely target Pettersson and Hughes and make life as difficult for them as possible. Greenway certainly is, a big guy that can bring a physical game. Marcus Foligno is another really good one in terms of a guy that might play at a shutdown role. Ryan Hartman too. One name that I've thought of here is Joel Eriksson Ek, who might end up playing a matchup role too. But it is an interesting conversation because oftentimes when you think of these players, you think physical. Mm-hmm. Right, like Dustin Byfuglien, big bruising body. Michael Ferland, when he was playing against the Canucks, brought that physical element. But I don't know if we're going to get that from Minnesota because the Wild averaged the fewest hits per 60 of any team in the league this year. So even though some of their players, you think of them as bigger power forward types, they're not really a very physical team. So, you know, there might be players that get under your skin for different reasons, whether it's, you know, a guy that comes up and is clutch and scores some key goals. But I don't know if it's going to be in that traditional sense where, you know, it's someone wrecking havoc physically in the series.
The guy I do look at is Jordan Greenway. We saw a brief flash in a game with him where, you know, he's got that physical component, especially around the net, just making life tough for defenders trying to move him. And, you know, you could just picture him and Alex Edler going at it. Or, you know, how does he come on a forecheck to lay a hit on a Chris Tanev retrieving the puck, right? So that's the guy I think you can already kind of see, as Alistair was alluding to, that, you know, stands out as far as being that thorn in the side of everyone. There's a couple of texts here talking about Kevin Fiala or Zuccarello. And I look at those guys like, man, yeah, they're going to be frustrating because they'll score, but are they going to be that guy that fans hate, right? Like, Patrick Kane put up a lot of points, but and they hated him for other reasons, but Dustin Byfuglien's the one who drew all the emotion, eager, those types of guys.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't know if there are those types of guys in this series. Like, Jordan Greenway could be like that, but he feels like, you know, when you compare it to some of the physical guys like Eager or Byfuglien, like, Greenway feels like a light version of those guys. Like, he's not going to have that same level of impact. He doesn't play as far up the lineup as some of those guys did. So it might end up being that the most hated Minnesota Wild player coming out of this series is a guy that finds a way to score key goals, or is that guy that, you know, when the Canucks are doing well, finds a way to turn the momentum with a great play or a key goal at a key time. So, you know, Kevin Fiala was one of those guys that jumped to mind for me immediately when we were thinking about this conversation before coming on the air this morning, because, you know, we've seen him have very good stretches this past season and, you know, even dominate the Canucks to a certain extent too. So, it's hard to really predict. Also, with the added element that we don't know what this series is going to look like at all, because it's not going to be a traditional playoff series because of all the time off and, you know, guys having only played two exhibition games before jumping into game one. I don't know if this series in particular will have the feel of some of those classic rivalry Canucks series where there were big bruising physical players on the other side.
Joey in Richmond wanted to illuminate, sorry, I misread this, Fiala, Stalin, Zuccarello, because he lost a couple of fantasy matchups this year against people with those players. So, hey, I get it, man. Whatever you need to strike emotion for you. He also puts in Mikko Koivu, who's gotten surly and nasty in his old age. Hey, you know, he's been known for a couple of hacks that, you know, people aren't thrilled at. Dan in Brentwood, I fully expect Hartman to be the giant pain in the butt, especially a smaller pest guy. They do have a few big boys. You know, Foligno does like to fight, but I'm not sure if I'm looking at him to be that guy because he's not necessarily as prominent as far as overall on the ice play.
Yeah, and he has been a spark guy for them, though, right?
Like, yeah.
Am I not mistaken? He fought Zach MacEwen in a game in Minnesota this year, if I remember correctly. So he could be that guy that tries to spark his team with a big hit, or you know, usually we don't see fighting as much in playoff hockey, but maybe that's what he does. And yes, indeed, he did fight Zach MacEwen back in February. So he could be that kind of guy, but I don't know if, you know, most teams have those kinds of players. But is he going to be the guy that consistently coming out of every game, Canuck fans are going, man, that Marcus Foligno, I can't stand him. I don't know if he has that big of an impact, but hey, you know, I could be completely wrong about that too. It's going to be somewhat hard to predict. I will say this. I think Marcus Foligno has a better chance of being that guy than Jordan Greenway does, just because Marcus Foligno plays a bigger role on that team.
650, unsigned text here. I just have a feeling Canucks are going to have a hard time with the Wild in general, have a horrible road record against them. They have a hard time beating Devin Dubnyk. Well, the road stuff doesn't matter because we're all going to be, or all the players are going to be within that bubble, right? So they're all technically road games for everyone. Nobody gets a home ice advantage in this.
But even then, no fans in the stands.
Yeah. Right? So. No fans in the stands. It's not as if they're at home, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So
They won't be in their own residences.
Like they're living in hotels, even though they're in their own city. But that said, there's something to be said for the familiarity of your own rink and your own dressing room and all of that stuff. But the point is well made about the Canucks have had a tough time with the Wild over the last few years. Mm-hmm. The interesting question to me, though, is, you know, that texter brings up the Canucks have had a hard time with Devin Dubnyk. I don't think there's any guarantee that Devin Dubnyk is the starting goaltender for game one of this series, because he had a tough year and Alex Stalock had to some degree taken over that starting role when the season was paused. So
he basically stabilized their season, right?
Yeah. So I don't think there's any guarantee that the Canucks will be going up against Devin Dubnyk. Now it's still possibly the case. And Devin Dubnyk has been very solid at stretches throughout his career. So it's entirely possible that the most hated player for the Wild coming out of this series is the goaltender, whether it's Stalock or Dubnyk, if they're able to shut the door, if they're able to, you know, provide better clutch goaltending than Jacob Markstrom and find a way to help Minnesota win that series.
Now, if my memory serves me correctly, it feels like it's been forever. Dubnyk did start to be a bit better near the end coming back, you know, managing to pick up some wins, albeit with some higher scores, but you know, he did struggle early on in the season, and they really needed Stalock at a point where he really started to, you know, become the guy that they really needed to try to save their season. You know, because that was a team that was supposed to be mocked basically all season long because of their off season, and then they did start slow. But they put themselves in a position to be in the conversation in regards to getting towards the playoffs. Andrew from Poco, 650. It's gonna be Minnie's team defensive structure that will be the thorn in the Canucks' high octane game. And Ryan Suter's a very strong player with the right amount of physicality to his game. If you want to talk about annoying players who, you know, will be very physical, think of a guy like Elias Pettersson trying to enter the zone, and how will Ryan Suter manage him over the course of five games should it go that long? That's only a guy, I think, because of the physicality he brings, people will try to direct their anger towards. But a player like Jonas Brodin is so technically proficient and also a great defender, just because there's not as much physicality in his game, I don't know if people will react to him as the same.
Well, and Ryan Suter has a good chance to be that hated player because he's going to be on the ice for the whole series, essentially.
True, yeah.
Right? Like as much as he's already a guy that plays a lot, he was averaging the ninth most average ice time in the league when the pause happened, and he's usually above that. He was, you know, playing north of 24 and a half minutes a game. One of the things that I think we might see from these teams, especially in the five-game play-in round, to try and ensure that they get into the proper playoffs, is to really ride their top players. And we've talked about that from a Canucks perspective as well, that when the top six is on the ice, when Quinn Hughes is on the ice, the underlying metrics look a lot better than when your bottom pairings or your bottom six are on the ice. So, you know, Ryan Suter could be that hated guy because Ryan Suter might not come off the ice for the entire series. But, you know, the point is well made about Jonas Brodin. I think Matt Dumba is a guy who has kind of a little bit of a mean streak in him as well, on top of the fact that he's a skilled defenseman that can hurt the Canucks by producing points and scoring goals. So, you know, it's funny because we're trying to have this conversation, and at this point we've named like half of Minnesota's roster. It's
hey man, hard. People are concerned about a lot of players.
Yeah, well, and it's hard to pinpoint just one. So maybe it does come back to that point that the texter made just a moment ago, that the overall team play that the Minnesota Wild bring could end up being the most frustrating thing out of this series.
It's a good point from the spectrum too, as well. 650, 650. I think the point is the Wild have more ability to agitate than us. We don't really have anyone. Ferland does not count at this point. Love the show. So look, it's a good point. If you flip it and say there's a sports radio show in Minnesota talking about Who should they worry about that's going to frustrate them? Do the Canucks really have anyone?
JT Miller could be that guy.
He's the only one that stood out to me, right? Yeah.
Right. He scores a lot. You know, he plays on the top line, but he's got, you know, a bit of a mean streak, some physicality in him as well. I would expect that other markets might look at Alex Edler as being a guy that could low key be like that, but somewhat low key. But, you know, again, I don't necessarily expect this to be an incredibly physical series, because as much as we're listing these guys on the Wild, none of them jump out to me as a Dustin Byfuglien type or a Ben Eager type.
Well, you know who it could be, or at least who's got the greatest potential for it to be, and I think the style of player people want him to become?
Jake
Virtanen, yeah. Right? And if he shows that, suddenly there's a whole new element to his game that, you know, we necessarily haven't seen a lot, but if it comes with consistency in the drama that is the playoffs, that, like, that's how legacies to some degree are made, and that's how narratives get changed for players.
Well, and this is going to be an interesting test for Jake Virtanen, because, you know, certainly he's a divisive player in this market, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are people that believe that Jake Virtanen can be, you know, Tom Wilson or Tom Wilson light in the playoffs. And part of the argument of people that are really, you know, pro Virtanen and think he can be a great power forward is, man, just wait till this guy gets to play in the playoffs, then you'll see what he's really made of. Well, he's going to get that chance here, right? For the first time, we're going to see what Jake Virtanen can do in that sort of role. And, you know, we've talked about what his long-term future might be with the organization as a restricted free agent that they could potentially look to trade. He could really impact his value both as a potential trade chip or his value to this Canucks team. If he comes in and can be that kind of player in the playoffs and can make a big difference for this organization, then that changes the conversation around Jake Virtanen quite a lot, but he has to do it. And I personally am not one who believes that he's going to be able to flip that switch all of a sudden just because it's a playoff game.
The runaway favorite now in our text inbox has become Ryan Hartman. Definitely. This one's from Leif Roldan. Definitely Hartman, because he's a POS in the classic hockey sense. So a lot of texters building up the hate towards Ryan Hartman. Hopefully we get to see this series, you know, as we still get through phase two here. With the NHL protocols. I should note too as well, it's expected that the players will vote during this week. One thing that I think we forgot to mention, Batch, in the earlier segment is players can still opt out of this. So following the ratification, 3 days after that CBA ratification, is the players' opt-out date in all of this.
Yeah, and you know, we had heard at various points through this process that they might be only allowing players to opt out for medical reasons, but it seems like that was something that the PA wasn't willing to budge on. You can understand why. Guys shouldn't be forced to go and play if they're not comfortable with the situation, whether they have a health condition, maybe a family member has a health condition, maybe, you know, a guy like Jordy Benn says, you know what, I want to spend time with my newborn child and it's not worth it to me to put my own health at risk, right? So I understand and I support the fact that the NHL and the PA have agreed to allow people to opt out. Now the question is going to be how many guys opt out, because, you know, the optics of being the one guy that opts out, do you want to be that guy? And from my perspective, I'm not going to take anything away from anyone that opts out.
Totally.
But, you know, if you're the one guy, or, you know, if there's only five or six guys that opt out, how are you seen, you know, around the league? And are you opening yourself up to be chirped about choosing not to play for years down the road, right? So I'll be interested. Hockey culture is something that could very much play into this. Like, we've heard lots of Major League Baseball players, you know, a few NBA players coming out as well and saying that they're going to opt out. I wonder how much hockey culture is going to have an impact on the number of those cases that we see in the NHL.
For sure. Bit of a scheduling conflict today, so we won't have our winner for Game of Takes, but you did vote on it all weekend long at Sportsnet650 on Twitter, so let's get to it. It's Game of Takes.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
If a lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of a sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
We posed it to you last week. Who is the Canucks MVP? Myself, Bick Nizar, and Jamie Dodd posed it to you. Jamie was very much pro Pettersson, along with our champion Ty Pardee. I was pro Markstrom, along with our contender Nick Dragon.
And where did it go? Markstrom as well.
There you are. I was just about to ask you, Badge.
Yeah.
And so you voted over the course of the weekend, and winning it was Nick Dragon, a fitting name for our game of takes here. So Nick is our new champion and the reigning former champion. Ty, you know how this goes, man.
Dracarys.
The reign is over. We do salute you for your time on the composite throne.
And now your watch has ended.
Yes, now your watch has ended. So shout out to Nick, who, again, couldn't join us today. So we'll set up the topic for this week, which you can reply to at Sportsnet 650.
And yeah, it means we get to pick it, right? Nick, Nick normally, if he came on the show, would have the opportunity to pick, but he's unable to join us. So we're going to choose the topic for him this week.
And we talked about it, the media at least, all last week. So we now pose it to you, the fans and our listeners. Are you team tank or are you team win? We leave it to you at Sportsnet 650. We'll put that up in just a minute and how you can get involved on Game of Takes. Again, so shout out to Nick Dragon. Congratulations, man. You are on top of the composite throne for this week.
My reign has just begun.
You're so extra with this. I love it.
It's awesome. Yeah, so, you know, this has been raging on Canuck Twitter for a couple of weeks, and we figured we've got to get in on the action here. So, you know, send us your takes on Twitter at Sportsnet 650, at Batch Hockey, at Bick 650, I believe, correct?
Yep.
Yep. And let us know, are you team win? Are you someone that no matter what, you want the Canucks to beat the Minnesota Wild and go on to the playoffs? Or is the chance at taking Alexi Lafreniere first overall strong enough for you? And we've seen some people with this opinion on Canuck Twitter that you want the Canucks to lose so that they have a shot at picking first overall. Let us know on Twitter, and we'll get to Game of Takes later in the week.
A lot going on today. Coming up on Reach Deep, the man who's been tweeting out all the details for this return to play scenarios and the CBA, NHL insider Chris Johnson, will join them. Plus, you want to talk about annoying guys in playoff series who bring that truculence? Brad May, former Canuck, former Sabre, will join Reach Deep. And also, if you didn't hear, Patty Mahomes got a 10-year contract extension. Yes, 10 years. Think how old you'll be in 10 years, and Pat Mahomes will still be balling. And the guys on Reach Deep will have all the details.
And we haven't seen the money figures on that yet.
I know. It's going to be staggering.
I can't even imagine.
It's going to be awesome. That's all coming up. They'll talk about it and set you up for the rest of the day here on the home of the Canucks. It's Sportsnet 650.